Prologue. Zeldina. It was early 2000s. I was in my 30s. I stood outside our office door in Johannesburg, as usual, awaiting the arrival of Nelson Mandela to receive him, escort him into his office, and brief him on the events for the day. Whenever his car appeared around the corner, my face lit up, no matter how much pressure I was under. The smile that painted my face was one loaded with love and admiration, like one would have when you see your dearest grandparents. His car came to a standstill, and the bodyguards emerged. We greeted and briefly exchanged pleasantries before they opened the heavily armed car door for Madiba to step out of the car. Madiba is Nelson Mandela's clan name in South Africa. It is also the term with which people endearingly refer to him. Some call him Tata, which means father, but most people refer to him and address him as Madiba. I call him Kulu, an abbreviated version of Tata Nkulu, which means grandfather. While getting out of the car, our eyes met. I exclaimed, "Good morning, Kulu." He called me Zeldina. He was handed his walking stick to support himself to get out of the car. The stick was made from ivory, a gift from his good friend Dove Steyn. He didn't care much for material things, but his walking stick was one of the few items he valued and protected with his life. "Good morning, Zeldina," he said as he emerged from the car. His face lit up with the usual smile, although I detected some reserve. Once the bodyguards had him steady on his feet, they handed him to me. He would support himself on his walking stick and hold on to my arm with his left hand. "How are you this morning, Kulu?" I asked.
"I'm fine, Zeldina," he said,
but he didn't continue as he usually did, asking after my well-being. That was another sign that something bothered him. As we walked into his office, I thought of giving him a few moments to gather his thoughts before I started overloading him with information about the day. Once his office door was closed, he opened up.
"You know, Zeldina, I had a dream last night."
I responded with a, "Yes?"
"I dreamt that you left me, that you deserted me," he said.
I was dumbstruck. Me? Zelda Lagrange? Abandoning Nelson Mandela? How could he ever conceive me doing something like that? At the time I'd been in his service for almost 10 years, what would cause him to feel that I would abandon him? To the contrary, because of my early childhood, I was the one who feared abandonment. I had to set his mind at ease. I put my left hand on his left hand, which was holding onto my right arm, and said, "Kulu, I would never, ever do something like that. And you should please never think about that ever again. I can give you my assurance that I will never abandon you." And then added on a lighter note, "In any event, I think you are going to abandon me or chase me away before I can abandon you." He looked at me, laughed half-heartedly, lifted his eyebrows, and then responded,
"I will never do that."
That was the warmth of our relationship. We needed affirmation from each other. We looked after each other. I have grown to love this man who was once my people's enemy. He resembled fear in our eyes. Growing up in apartheid South Africa as a white Afrikaner, we had spent our lives oppressing the same people that Nelson Mandela represented. He was the voice of the oppressed and the liberation struggle. Less than 15 years after his release from prison, here I was, trying to explain and defend my commitment to the man we once despised. Apartheid was a system introduced by the white government in South Africa in the 1940s. It advocated for white supremacy and black oppression and was a clear set of legislation providing for the separation and segregation of white and black in South Africa. The laws of apartheid were upheld in churches and schools, on beaches and in restaurants, and any areas where the white minority could feel intimidated by the presence of black people. Yet I walked next to Nelson Mandela for most of my adult professional life, each of us holding on to the other. I was a young Afrikaner girl whose views and mindset were changed by the greatest statesman of our time. Yet to me, he was more than my moral conscience. I had learned to care for him because he cared for me. He shaped and changed my thinking because for him to employ a white Afrikaans-speaking young woman as his personal assistant was not only unprecedented, it was unheard of.